What we're going to do now is do a roundtable discussion to cover a topic that's something that I'm trying to prioritize, and I've got to convince you all to be interested in doing it for it to work. There are thousands of committees, commissions, advisory panels, things that all you have to do is sign up and you often will get chosen. Now, if the higher in importance it becomes, the harder it can be. And if you need to get onto a state one, you may have to go through the governor's office. But what we want to do is get our libertarians to start taking a more active role in what can be a lot of nitty-gritty, but it can also be a very narrow topic, so you're not fighting off the whole world. You're not trying to solve all of a state's problems or a national problems, but you're focusing on just one or two issues. I represent a lot of local governments that I do a lot of administrative law. So I represent zoning boards, planning and zoning commissions. Lately, I've been more against them and representing developers challenging the decisions of those bodies. But what I've learned over 20-plus years of doing that is that these are not planning experts. Once you get to the bigger cities, then they tend to be a little more sophisticated in choosing their candidates. But if you live in a small municipality, you can almost just walk on to those commissions because a lot of citizens' apathy is so great. And the advantage, well, if you're young and want to start building a political resume so that you can run for office later, that's a great thing to do. Have service on a board of appeals or a planning and zoning commission. Another good one is ethics commissions. And there you can even get on ethics commissions of the counties because they have problems, except for the really big counties, Baltimore County, Baltimore City. They have problems filling those roles. The advantage is that you get to bring some libertarian perspectives to a single subject and think about what's the best way, because often we address things in really broad perspectives. End the Fed, you know, I bet you we can, vote on that now, and everybody's going to want to. Should we vote on that now? This is a shall versus should issue. But let's assume you've got a vote to actually end the Fed. We all know that there would be some system by which the Fed was removed, and it would take time, and there would have to be somebody doing a lot of sophisticated things about it. So everything, even a very binary choice, results in a lot of detailed policy questions on how you get there. Because if you don't do that, what you often will get is what you got in Russia when the Soviet Union fell and they privatized businesses by basically giving to parties, paying off favors to the Yeltsin. So, you know, privatization sounds great, but if all you're doing is giving it to a couple oligarchs, has it really solved anything? Has it really been a good libertarian solution? My point is, we need people to get out into the community and start joining these kind of committees. If you want to do zoning or ethics, I've represented both of those boards, and I can give you a lot of detailed information about what they do and how they do it. So what I'd like to do is bring up two of our members who have served on those commissions, Mir Boda and Dean Ahmad. And what we're going to do is talk a little bit to give you some insight about their service on their local county redistricting commissions. You can come on and just sit up here. And as you know, redistricting, one of the things we fight the most is gerrymandering. And a civil body that does redistricting has the opportunity to limit the effect of gerrymandering. And so I'd like to just talk to these gentlemen who put in a lot of time and effort into their local county redistricting committee so that you can get a sense of what it's like to serve on those things, because it's really easy to hear somebody say you should be doing. It's a lot better, though, if you realize it's not hard to do. You just got to be the one to raise your hand, because 90% of politics is who's raising their hand. So I don't know whether you guys want the microphone passed around or you just want to talk. And I'll ask some questions, but do you want the mic?
Yeah,
Okay, so Dean, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you first got appointed to the Montgomery County Redistricting Commission?
Okay. So, well, the first thing you need to know is that the opportunity was created by changing the rules for the composition of the redistricting committee, so the council, the commission, and the county council. They passed a rule that no single political party can appoint more, can have more than a majority, can have a majority of representatives on the commission. Now, of course, Montgomery County, I'm sure you all know, is dominated by the Democratic Party, and that the Democrats could not appoint more than 5 people for the 11-member commission. Well, you know they were not going to appoint 5 Republicans. They had to appoint at least one person who was neither a Republican or a Democrat, and they wanted to do even more than that, because they wanted the Democrats to have a plurality. They appointed 5 Democrats, they appointed 3 Republicans, they appointed, that's 8, they appointed 2 independents, and they appointed me. Now, how I got on there was we got a call, the Libertarian Party got a call from the Green Party saying, this is a great opportunity, but we don't have anybody that'll do the work. So do you have somebody? And they asked me if I would do it. I volunteered. I had the support not only of the Libertarian Party and the Green Party for the appointment, but also the support of the Montgomery County Civic Federation, which I had been past president of, which brings us back to get active in the community. When you're active in the community, you're going to have the community support when an opportunity like this comes up. So I was appointed to the commission. It was a considerable amount of work, especially fighting with the software that draws out the provisional boundaries for the county council districts. I'll not say too much more. I'll wait for what your questions are. But I will tell you this. Most of the people on the commission were seriously interested in trying to come up with a decent set of boundaries. Now, of course, they all carry their own, you know, agendas, but most of them were reasonable in their working. I must tell you, and I don't know if you can stop this from getting out of this room, but let's just say that there was one Democrat who was not biased so much for the Democratic Party as for a particular seat that he or she wanted to control. And because of that, the boundaries we ended up with, while they're not bad at all, compare them with the congressional boundaries that were proposed by the State Commission, which were ridiculous, they're quite decent. But in order to make sure that this person wanted to win the primary, one of the boundaries had to be made in a certain way that sort of pushed the others into a funny shape and caused a lot of citizens to be unhappy. None of us on the commission, I shouldn't say none of us, a majority of the commission realized this was a problem. We also knew that this was a red line for somebody very powerful, and there's nothing we can do about it. So what we did is we worked real hard to minimize the damage. And I think we did that. In other words, they got what they wanted, but the damage that was done to the other districts was minimized. So I made some good friends there. There were some people who, you know, just just really were there to do the work. And I highly recommend, if you're willing to put the time in, highly recommend you doing it. And I think about how you do it. Yeah.
Okay. Now, did this deal with only the calcimatic boundaries?
That's right. This is strictly limited. Which is something we had a lot of problems getting the public to understand. When we solicited public input, people could call us and say, the school board, you have nothing to do with the school board. What's that recommendation?
Okay, so if we can turn to Muir.
So I served on the Wicomico County Redistricting Commission, and in the past I've served on a bunch of different boards. I started out at the Recycling Committee. I was on the Housing Board of Adjustments and Appeals, which is if you have a neighborhood services code compliance in the city, they cite you and you appeal when you go to the board. So they have, that's like one of the many boards that our city has. But this was a county board, and our situation was, we not only were we drawing our councilmanic districts, but the councilmanic districts also overlap, and so District 1 has a council member, and they also have a school board member. So our county has five districts, and then two at large. One of those districts is a minority district. And there was a push by, much like him, there was a person there with an agenda, and they were trying to get the one town of Hebron, which is about 80%, 85% white, and they were trying to get that put into District 2 to help that district and take it out of minority district. Well, when you do that, then you've got to do all these other things to make sure that all the populations in the district are relatively the same. So they all need to be about the same number in each district. And then it just creates a whole other whack-a-mole. So you're trying to, when you move something here, then you've got to fill this hole and that hole. And another group of us had, our goal was to try to get, so there's some municipalities, so we have seven municipalities in our county, it's a big county, 427 miles. Not as populated as Montgomery, but as land-wise, it's large. And so, like, from one end of the county to another, it's about an hour drive. So it's pretty big. So a couple of these towns had multiple districts in them. So you might have a town like Fruitland. The city of Fruitland. They had two districts, and the town split down the middle. So there's confusion. People living in Fruitland, who their county council district member is. And Willard's had three houses that were in another district, but still in the town boundary. And so ultimately, there was a lot of back and forth. There was a lot of, a couple meetings were very heated. They had to stop the meetings. There was a lot of racial tension, but it was between two white people. So I, that's essentially it's the far right versus the far left, basically, is what it was. And they thought that I was going to be one of the problems on the commission. But anyway, we ended up, we only moved about 50 people. The district stayed about the same. We did get Willard's in one district, but Fruitland we never came to an agreement upon, because what was going to happen, it would have created a second minority district, and they didn't really want that. So now I'm on the Salisbury City Council, and we're going to have a public hearing on our redistricting in the city. We have currently five districts, two minority districts. I represent one, and based on our demographics, we're going to have a third minority district in our city. But that's based on the demographics, and we were had a pretty open dialogue prior to it and during the meeting. And we also, the district that I have now is much like the congressional districts on the Western Shore, where it was just kind of all over town. What we did, we went back and made all of our districts compact. So we didn't break up neighborhoods. We kept a couple of neighborhoods in a district, which is more representative. There's like one neighborhood that has like four districts go into it. And it's confusing when you're knocking on doors, like one side of the street, you're in one district, on the other side of the street is a different district, you know. So we found a better way to do that, and it's more fair, and I think represents our city better.
So how often did your commissions have to meet?
They are every 10 years, so it's...
No, I meant as you're holding meetings.
We did about twice a month. We had meetings once or twice a month from August through November was our final meeting. And then it went to the council. Our goal was to have it to the council by December because they had a deadline as well.
We had meetings once or twice a month. We only had to meet in person at the county council office, I think, twice. And the other times we got by Zoom. And then, of course, there were also what's called caucus meetings, subgroups of the people drawing maps as people organized around three different proposed maps that we were pushing for.
So did the other committee or commission members know that you were libertarians? And if so, how did that change the way they reacted to you or address issues? Did they treat you differently? What was that dynamic like?
I would say that on at least openly, I was not treated differently. I think people privately commented that they expected that I might be the problem when I wasn't the problem. Something else.
Yeah, when the libertarian is the voice of reason in the room, it's a great thing. We had it was seven people on it. And I was contacted by one of the county council members that I've known all his life. So everybody that was at the board I knew. There was me, I was libertarian, there was an independent, and then the rest was a mix of Democrats and Republicans. For the most part, the people on there were two professors from Salisbury University. There was a former county council president. An educator, I think a teacher, somebody that worked for the Board of Education, and then somebody from the Republican Central Committee, and then somebody from, she's running for county executive now, but she's part of like our right-wing conspiracy group.
And did you feel like you were able to steer your commissions in a better direction at various points during those commissions?
There were a couple of points, and I think when we got down to it, we couldn't go either way. Then because we had at one point we had like six or seven maps, and so I started trying to steer them to, hey, well, let's like eliminate a couple maps. So we did, and then we were able then to help once we got everybody productive and the heat out of the way. We narrowed it down to what everybody was willing to compromise on, which ended up being not much. I mean, doing that.
As I said, I think we were able to minimize the damage that could have been done. As I said, there were three proposed maps that were being fought over. One was clearly under control of a faction within the Democratic Party. Another one was a pro-Democrat map, but more fair to within the party. And then there was my proposal, which a couple of people on the committee told me that they thought was the best, but a smaller number than that actually voted for. But what happened was not only did the compromise map, the mirror map, get approved, but it was improved in the process by the comments that we made.
That's great. So one point I want to make, for those that don't know, a libertarian, Walter Olson, served on the statewide as one of the three co-chairs of the redistricting commission that was appointed by Governor Hogan as the civilian version of this. This was the alternative to the legislative maps. And Walter's works with Cato and lives in Frederick. And he's been to a couple of these annual conventions over the years. When we would talk in the side hallways of the General Assembly about various bills, we'd always drift towards redistricting because we were trying to we were arguing over a law that would have mandated a civil redistricting commission. That's not mandatory now. And he stressed that, look, having the Libertarian in the room can make a big difference to a better outcome. And I think you see that because their maps got an A grade from the Princeton group. The legislative maps got an F. They were overturned in court. And the compromise that was reached was awfully close, not perfect, but awfully close to the civilian board's maps. So, you know, having you know, he's just one of many people on that board, but it helps. And he put a lot of time and energy. So one question is, how much were the commission's outcomes dominated by professional staffs for your, you know, sometimes they'll hire a staff to do all the mapping and the data work, and sometimes the staffs can be kind of leading the whole parade. So did you experience any of that?
That was not the case with us. The staff, of course, was responsible for providing the software that we worked with, and the staff had to instruct the less tech-savvy members of the commission on how to do it. And at one point, some of the members of the commission asked the professional staff to actually generate a map for us to work with. But the rest of us said, no, we're providing maps. We work, you know, if you need help from the staff in adjusting our maps, compromising is the problem, of course. But it's our job to do this. I wanted to say that, not quite to your question, but there was one thing on which I lost outright, and that was I called for an answer that we have one public hearing where we would allow the general public to come and make its comments on the maps that we were proposing, and they would not allow that. And I'm pretty sure I know why they wouldn't allow it, but they said, no, public hearings will be held by the county council. Well, of course, we knew the county council would just rubber stamp that, you know, map that it wasn't in fact that it was approved.
Mr. McKenzie is the guy that works GIS and runs all that maps and stuff with Wakamatsu County, and he helps with the cities. He did a lot of the software work, but we had projectors in the room. And then one night we were hours, you know, telling them, what if you do this? What if you do that? Some of us brought in some information that we had found through the census and then election districts and stuff, and we were looking at different things, and we had the areas, and he would go through. He did all the work in the software and then would save it, and then he would print the maps out and bring them into us. I've got a bunch of them at home, I like maps. But the city was pretty much a conversation between myself, the mayor, and then I had a conversation with Mr. McKenzie, and I had given him my idea of how I thought the city should be divided up into districts, and that's pretty much the map that he did.
And what should libertarians or anybody that wants to join a commission or an advisory panel, what would you advise them now, having gone through those experiences? What should they know before they get into it?
Well, you know, first look at, you know, what interests you, number one. Is it zoning laws? Is it neighborhood service compliance? Is it, parks and recs? There's you know, a lot of these towns and counties have multiple committees. A lot of them have, you know, we have an arts and entertainment district in Salisbury, so there's a lot of people that are into that. So it's what interests you. And then it would be looking at what's available. And there's, like in our city, there's always seats available. There's terms of like, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. So look at your county or city website to see what's available. They generally keep the list of up-to-date if there's any vacancies. And look at the meeting schedule. Does it fit your schedule? Most of the meetings are once a month. Sometimes they're once every quarter. Some committees, like we have one in Salisbury, the Traffic Safety Committee, it meets as needed. Same thing with the Housing Board of Adjustment Appeals. It meets as needed because if there's no appeals, they're not going to have a meeting, but if sometimes they get two or three that come in, they have a meeting. So it's just, you know, those are the three things: your interest, look at what's available, and match it up with your schedule.
I agree with that, and I would only add, you know, in order to prep for it, get involved with your civic federation and your local citizens organizations, and get involved in those issues that you've got an eye for getting involved with, getting appointed to commissions later, because that's going to give you a good feel for the questions that come up, the kind of details you're going to have to wrangle with, and it will get you known in the community as someone who is interested in these issues.
And finally, and then I'll turn to some questions from the audience, did you find it enjoyable?
I thought it was very entertaining, especially the couple of nights when they really, I mean, the one argument went on for like 15, 20 minutes, and then another night it got so heated. I was like, man, this is great. but it was fun. It was interesting, and it's kind of like my thing too. So you know, that's why I went for it.
Yes, overall it was an enjoyable experience. There were the moments of frustration, but they were the, you know, they didn't ruin the whole thing. The experience was a good one, and I recommend everyone try it.
So. I'll throw it out to questions in a second. I just want to make a couple points. One, because of the COVID lockdowns, a lot of the boards and commissions were holding their meetings through Zoom. They're all on YouTube. So if you have an interest in some commission, it deals with a subject matter that you might, all you got to do is go watch YouTube to find out what those meetings are like and maybe find out how they could be done a little better. Right. So the other thing I'll just mention is picking up off something that Dean said. It's when I'm doing legislative coalitions and we've got a lot of really wide diversity of ideological groups represented, you'd be shocked at how many times the libertarians are the ones who carry the day because they're the most reasoned, kind of down to earth, just here's why we should do X, Y, and Z, and here's sometimes it's because they like the libertarian result better. And I mean, Common Cause doesn't like me because they know that within our open government commission, the Libertarian Party keeps on getting credit for doing a bunch of things. Because we tend to be the center around which the right, well, it's mostly a lot of left-wing groups in that group, but around which a lot of ideological debates. So who else has questions of Dean or Muir?
What was the
what was your prior experience level?
But I didn't have any experience at all in actual resistance. My experience was in the civic movement in the county, because we were as interested in those questions in general. Again, as was indicated, there's a real vacuum. Even in a county as big as the voter, because even though I was, as I said, helped by the fact that it said that, you know, just that they were trying to minimize the number of Republicans that get appointed to the committee, and so they were wide open for appointing two independents and a libertarian. But where are you going to find two independents and a libertarian who have some special expertise? So I didn't have any special expertise, but I did have an interest in a general experience with these kind of general questions.
I think, you know, being on the city council and having other experiences in the past, I mean, I've run for office or some political office probably 7 times, and the only other person that's knocked on doors more than me in that area is Delegate Carl Anderton. So that's, you know, just from years of that. So I know the areas, I know the streets, I know the towns. I've lived in a couple of the towns, so I kind of had that base of knowledge as well.
Actually, I just realized there was one thing that I didn't mention in my application that might surprise you. the voting system we use as an alternative to the whole redistricting problem. But that was beyond the scope of this commission. We couldn't make any such recommendation. But it's my intention, now that I've served on the commission, to in the future go and testify in front of the county council and say, why I put the burden of making politicized decisions about districting when you can resolve a whole problem by just using a ranked choice voting system so that you like you vote for so many county council members in order of preference, and you don't have to worry, let the voters worry about what party they belong to. That has nothing to do with the people who belong to the system.
Other questions? David.
Mr. Moss, we were thinking about ranked choice voting instead of district, so that a candidate running in the county would have to cover the entire district and all over, the entire county.
The voters would have to vote for the entire county. But of course, voters could choose to vote for someone from their district.
We had a question over here.
It sounds like both of you remained on your commission for a long period of time. Do you recommend or do you notice any sort of movement between commissions? Like if you're on one to serve for a period of time and then someone moves to another one, or would you recommend focusing on one commission and sort of dedicating yourself to that?
I was only on this commission for several months.
About 4 months or so.
So I don't really have an answer to that question. I'm sure some people did move on, but it made a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, that was the same with this particular committee, because we had another one going on at the same time, the Charter Review Committee. Every 4 years they do a review of the charter for the county. But I know that, when I was on committees or commissions, I was only on one at a time. Because one of them I have met every month, and then another one after that was as needed. But on the city council, I'm a part of different committees. Sometimes you can get a pretty busy week if you've got city council meetings and a committee meeting the next one, and another one will come, so you might see it pretty full. I would only. We have a couple people that serve in our city on two, and that's because sometimes it's hard to find people to volunteer.
Any other questions? Yes, David.
I don't really have a question. I just have a couple of anecdotes. I have experience in that. I've had on a commission that was designed to redistrict high schools in Howard County. I don't think you can find an area that's more emotion laden than changing the district which their children are going through. And the two anecdotes I have is that I didn't realize a number of people were on the committee for one reason only. That was so they have that on a resume and not their school. So they were very politically motivated. And the second thing is that we would have a weekly meeting, and often there were two representatives from each high school district in the county. And people would come in and literally tell stories and break out crying because of they were known to be on the committee, and they'd be accosted in the grocery store or the mall by parents who they thought their children were going to be redistricted from their high school, and they'd be verbally abused by parents. So I'm not saying sometimes there are drawbacks.
That's a natural part of public service. We got a log down there that blasts me all the time. I work, I don't care. I work at Walmart, so people know me. They see, they come in, they talk to me. Sometimes they have questions. For the most part, people are respectful. People have questions, and most of the time they give you the opportunity to explain the situation. But as a part of public service.
one of the best ways of prepping for that is be a Little League coach.
Or an umpire.
Or an umpire. Anybody else? Any other questions? I want to thank you guys, you know, for your service. It's really important to me to have libertarians active in the actual administration of government, whether it's our legislative. We have three libertarians who serve on city councils, but also in these administrative roles, because that's where you're going to learn the details. I know everybody in this room is in favor of some pretty strong version of property rights. So if you're thinking about real property, what's the number one limitation on real property rights? It's zoning. So if you want to have an impact to liberalize the impact of statutes that limit your ability to do what you want to do with your property, which can be quite detailed, I'm fighting a comprehensive plan now that's 170 pages, and it's littered with utter ridiculousness. And I'm not doing that for the party as a lawyer, but I'm saying you can fight the good fight. Sometimes you get the NIMBY response in that, and so you're fighting people whose only objection is, I don't want that next to me, put it next to him. You know, it's not rational. Or people that say, I don't want this development, and basically saying, yeah, you own the property, but I'm going to use the power of government to say, no, you can't do what you want to do. So zoning is an easy area to get involved. Ethics commissions are great because it plays into what Dr. Ahmad was talking about, where often ethics commissions require either a balance or some number of independents to be represented. And they don't do that much work. By and large, they process the financial disclosures, and then they issue advisory opinions on when there's an ethics question of conflict of interest, or sometimes there's a complaint about an ethics violation, and that now you're getting to resolve in a kind of a quasi-judicial forum a complaint against a politician. What libertarian doesn't want to have fun with that? So, look, there's all kind of opportunity. I want to show you, if I can pull it up quickly. I put the first page in the in your binders of the commission. No, I'm sorry, the advisory committees that are for the state. And the reason I didn't print them all is I found out what the bill was for printing those binders and decided, okay, enough. But this is the list that you can get off the state website, and gives you a sense of all of the different – these are just the advisory panels. This isn't the commissions. This is just the advisory panels. The Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory. Almost all of the local governments have some sort of walkability commission or committee or something like that. They're advising people on planning and zoning how to improve walkability in their community. So you don't need expertise for that. I'm not saying you're going to be able to bring any. Yeah, I know how to walk. Some of these are much more difficult to get on and more politically charged than others. I'm not going to say that it's going to be easy to get you onto the Critical Area Commission. But, and Cybersecurity Council, unless you have expertise, that might be a problem. But as you can see, this list just goes on and on and on and covers lots of different topics. And Here's why I think this is important, is when dealing both on the county and city level, but also in the legislature, you wouldn't believe how many times the people that are making decisions want some sort of study. A lot of these commissions were formed because somebody needed a study. They've studied pot legalization since 2014. Study, study, study. And that's a different excuse for having a study, but my point is there's a lot of reasons why you can have a good impact on the ultimate outcome by influencing policy in a more libertarian direction within some of these commissions, because they get used by people. The walkability study committees that I talked about, they get used by planning and zoning. They get used by city administrations for planning sidewalk expansions or infrastructure expansions, or even deciding where best to run a water and sewer line, because now they're going to remove some lines off septic and now they're going to move water and sewer. Well, does it make sense within what's called smart growth, or does it basically, is it close to the residences that it would serve? So there's all kind of things that you all can get involved with, and you can go to the Maryland website that I listed the link in your binder and look over these, but I think the better place to actually start is look at your local community. If you live in a city, I'm almost sure there's an open slot for some committee or commission. If you live in a county, there's often spots. And the other thing is, you might see a spot open up, send in your resume, send in whatever they require for it, and not get selected that time. But another vacancy opens up, and sometimes what they do is go, let's just do the person that applied last time. Let's find out whether they're still interested. I've had plenty of people that I know get onto those kind of committees because they just applied. And something else that I think Dean mentioned is, he had prior service and it put him up for this commission. In small towns, I've seen people go from the planning and zoning, then they move to Board of Appeals, then they bounce all over the place. And as I said, usually politics and the outcomes that we often are fighting the most is controlled by those who show up, raise their hand. And so I just want to make that pitch. Do you guys want to say anything else?
I got a zoning issue.
Let's hear it.
So my first term on the city council was about a year and a half ago. And they were trying to put through an ordinance to ban chain of offenses in the city. And so what happened, we tabled it. So with an ordinance, we have like 60 days from the first reading to the final reading. And our city council, our president, Jack, he, his family has a cabin in New Hampshire for the summertime. They spend a lot there, and so this guy gets a chair to meet. And so we have a special meeting right before the work session. Our attorney is 5 minutes late. I started the meeting at 4:30. I said, entertain a motion to adopt the legislative agenda. 5 minutes. All right. I hear no motions. The legislative agenda is adjourned. We're ready for work session. Attorney came in. He's like, they had no idea. The mayor was like, he had no idea what happened. So then they found out after the meeting, I killed the bill. and I learned that from the mayor when he was on the council president. He did that 1 year on the bill. Ah, okay. So he put that in the meeting.
Don't tread on my chain.
Next year, we're having buttons about chain link fences. Well, I want to thank you both for your time and speaking.